It's Monday, the most fun day of the week, right?
Ah, boy, here we go.
The best day of the week.
No.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard.
Joining Steve Scafidi, it's radio legend herself, Carol Kay.
You're like Oscar the Grouch sometimes.
Yeah, but in a nice way.
In a nice way.
She's a big fan of Brandon, Carol, and Debbie.
Oh, very nice.
Well, I think she's a big fan of mine, too. She just doesn't want me to get a big head.
Well, Brandon's a stud, man. I mean,
let's take a break. I need some time to process what you just said. Hey, do your own thing. You do you, Carol.
Now broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue.
This is time to party.
Here's Steve and Carol.
Good morning, everybody. This is the problem when you have the producer that makes those intros. He's like got self-promotion going on in there. He's a big-time sports guy now. I got to hear about him, not me.
Calm down.
My goodness.
What's that about? It's like you're just coming out of the chute already.
Out of the gate hot.
He can give a little self-promo.
No. It's not the Brandon Snides show yet.
Keyword yet. It will be.
See what I deal with?
He's gunning for your job.
My goodness. Every day I have to deal with this. I'm behind the scenes
I
wrangling.
I love Brandon. I think he's great.
Of course we love Brandon, but every day there's behind-the-scenes wrangling that goes on.
Calm down.
All right. Now, this is not a calm topic.
Okay.
I teed it up with Vince and Eric, and I don't know if you were listening or not, but the war on social media is really getting engaging and interesting.
Okay.
Why do I say that?
Yeah, why do you say that?
So over the weekend, I look at a million different things about what to talk about. And I saw these stories popping up everywhere. And they're not new. But the news hook is what's happened recently. So we've all talked about the impact of social media on kids.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
School districts, school professionals.
Yes.
Mental health individuals.
They say it's not good for children of a certain age.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And there's been increasing amount of pressure on these companies to do something about it. Ideas like, banning anyone under the age of 16 from being on like TikTok or Facebook if they are anymore, because that's kind of an adult thing.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Twitter, uh-huh. Instagram,
right.
IG.
Right. Okay. There's a million of them.
Yeah. Snapchat, YouTube.
Yes.
Right.
Right. Everybody's trying to be a YouTube star.
Now, the news hook is this. School districts around the country are suing these online platforms, these social media companies, for their endangerment of our young people.
I don't know how that's going to work. And they're suing them on the basis of, can you give me an example?
Climbing rates in schools among young people of depression, suicide, suicidal thoughts, bullying, all the things that we've talked about on this show and other shows certainly have talked about.
Okay.
Those increasing rates of concern for our youngest.
So are you saying that they're filing law that they should be banning this kind of stuff that would be influencing young people? Because I don't know how you're going to keep young people off social media. They'll create a fake profile and
there's always ways around things.
Yeah.
Right? And that may or may not be true. Now, we know also that technology has given social media platforms and companies in general, online companies, anyone who's active on the internet, the ability to decipher if someone's actually trying to do that, trying to come in with a deceptive ID. There's all kinds of ways of back-checking.
Well, sure.
That.
Okay. All right.
Why this is relevant as far as the banning is, a Senator Josh Hawley has now introduced a bill that would ban anyone under 16 from being able to be on these platforms. Actual bill. Now, whether that succeeds or not,
it's not
completely
going to.
Completely different story.
Right. No.
But there's a growing sense among elected officials in Congress that this is something we have to pay attention to. We have had hearings, numerous committees that have brought in the big tech giants, the companies that own these platforms, and said, you got to do something here.
Well, Biden has come out and said that we need to hold these social media companies
responsible.
Accountable.
Yes.
Yes. You know what? I'm going to can I ask Brandon? He's the one with the young kid. Hey Brandon. Do you monitor your kids on social media? Are they on social media?
He's on the phone with a listener, but we'll get his thoughts. Let me just read this to you.
Okay.
San Mateo County. They have 23 school districts, part of the Silicon Valley area in Northern California. Very tech savvy. 107-page complaint in federal court last week alleging that social media companies use advanced artificial intelligence, AI, and machine learning technology to create addictive platforms that cause young people harm. That's the cause and effect, right? You're doing this. You've created this technology, or using these technologies, to actually endanger our children. That's the level we've reached now.
Okay. So we're having them policing themselves instead of a parent actually participating and saying, no, you're not going to go on this platform.
The parent question is an interesting one, because a responsible parent would already know these things. But here's the thing. And I don't have kids that are of that age anymore, but I know a lot of people that do. Kids have these phones tethered, figuratively,
well, sure,
to them 24/7, 365.
Absolutely. And I, during the school hours, I have absolutely no problem in pulling the phones from the kids. I have none whatsoever. You are not using this at lunchtime. You are not going to be doing this during recess or whatever kind of break you get.
That's the easy one for me.
Right.
Although some school districts aren't doing that.
Put the phones in a basket, and if you have a problem, I'll find your phone and I'll give it to you so you can call your parent. But mm-hmm. That's going to be it. And I think that giving some kind of a break like that would help in reduce some of these addictive things. I'd have to have an example as to what it is exactly that is so addictive, other than just the platform itself.
Well, I kind of laid it out, the technology reasons why they are targeting these kids with ads and other things that, and certainly the back and forth between kids is not healthy.
No, I don't think any of it's healthy. You know, I mean, I'll go back to even when I was a kid. My mom on Saturday mornings, she'd let us watch two cartoons and then chop, chop, clean your room. That was it. I mean, so
I don't necessarily want to come down on parents, but. Because it's a tough job, tougher than it's ever been, in my opinion.
Sure.
855-616-1620 is the old National Bank talk and text line. I would have zero problem with banning kids under 16. I don't think platforms like TikTok should even be in existence in this country anymore. Well, without some serious changes.
There is no social redemption in so many of them. I mean, I think Twitter is probably at the top of the list for me when it comes to information. Like, I can really... And I get a lot of news knowledge from Twitter just because it comes from all different angles. And I think that's fascinating. Facebook, I don't want to see pictures of your pet and your food. You know, TikTok to me is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It's like, why? Well, you're documenting. You have to, you know.
Everybody's got a stupid video.
Right.
Everybody has to share the stupid video.
And I'm not learning anything from your stupid video.
All right, we got to take a break. I'm Steve. She's Carol. It's Monday on WTMJ. We are digging into the world of social media. Steve and Carol on this Monday on WTMJ. You can join us 855-616-1620. Lots of texts, phone calls are heating up as well. Let's go to Melissa calling from Racine. Hey, Melissa.
Hi, good Melissa.
Morning. Hi, good morning. How are you?
We are wonderful.
Fine.
What do you think on this one?
So I have a now 17-year-old and 21-year-old daughter. And so we went through the pandemic and everything. And they both have bouts of depression. And one of them actually was suicidal a year ago. We had to take her to the hospital. It was really bad. And I think a lot of it had to do with just the fact that they had all the knowledge of the pandemic and all the riots and, you know, the... upheaval in America over the election, and then just being teenagers, which is hard enough as it is, they were, you couldn't insulate them from what was going on in the world.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what the internet is. To me, that was like the big problem, was when we were kids, you know, my mom, the news came on at 10 o'clock, half the time we were in bed.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Sorry, didn't mean to cut you off there. That's what I'm talking about. You asked for direct reasons why. I mean, that's one of them. Exposure to things they would never, ever be aware of. Now, you also asked a great question during the break. Well, there's the internet. They can still look this stuff up. But it's not handed over as easily as it is on these social media platforms. It's not a constant barrage. If you watch anything 24/7, 365, it's going to become ingrained in your brain.
Right. It's very hard to tell youngsters that what's happening on social media. I understand the whole component of you feel like you're inadequate because everybody's always, you know, they're showing their prime life, and you, it's hard to translate to them, this is not actually for real.
Of course it's not, because you, a youngster, a kid could take 24 pictures of themselves. They pick out the best one. Is that reality? Probably not.
No. But, you know, little Jimmy is not frolicking on the beach. He's made this up. Okay, just relax. So I just, it's very hard to get kids to understand that. But I just don't know how this is going to be policed. That's my thing. And why are we putting bills out saying that this is what we should be doing?
To that last question, it's the country, its citizens, and its elected representatives saying, if you're not going to police yourselves, we're going to nudge you in that direction. I think that's what's going to happen.
Got it.
I don't think... I doubt this bill is going to get past the proposal stage, right? It might get a hearing or two,
right,
at one of the committees.
Sure.
And we know that many of these big tech companies are being hauled into Congress in front of these committees, and they're being asked these questions. TikTok obviously has the additional question of influence from the country of China and whether or not they're spying on, in this case, recent story that I saw last week, U.S. journalists now being spied on,
right,
by the owners of TikTok. Allegedly. So there's a lot of concern here. I don't want us to all the fallback to be on everything now. Well, we can't police this, so we shouldn't do it. We've already seen how that works with, reckless driving, drunk driving. Oh, we can't. There's no way we can capture all of this.
Sure.
So that means we stop trying?
No, I'm not saying we stop trying, but it's just, to me, it seems rather futile, and the horse is out of the burning barn already. How did we get it back? I don't know how you wrangle that in. And how you police it. That's my question. I don't know how you police this.
Congress is saying to the tech companies, do something. That's the opening statement. Kelly joins us from Cudahy. Welcome to the show, Kelly.
Hi.
Well, good morning and thank you. I'm from a time when if there was an emergency or a change in plan, parents would call the school. And I said that, you know, to get a message to their child. I say that because there was a time when cell phones did not exist and they were not allowed in school. And I get the school board position of taking on the big companies that are part of this issue. But, you know, let's see what we can do about restricting access, at least during school hours. And I get that's a side issue to this whole thing, but it's one of the arrows in the quiver.
Yeah, and thanks for the call, Kelly. Actually, it's not a side issue because having these kids tethered to these devices, even at school, shows you the extent of the problem. There's no separation. I use the example when I go to dinner.
Oh, sure.
I look over a table. Everyone, including the adults, are on their smartphones. There's like no conversation happening.
Right. The art of conversation has fallen by the wayside because everybody's so damn connected. And I agree with what he said in the fact that you put your phones away during school hours and get a break.
It requires school boards, our representatives with the school districts, which, by the way, is the number one taxing entity on your property tax bill in Wisconsin. It's always number one.
Uh-huh.
So we should have a pretty strong vested interest, whether you have kids or not. Largest piece of your tax bill every year. We should have a strong interest in making sure that they're doing the right thing. In my mind, and you can have a different opinion or not, this is the minimum we should be doing is restricting the use in schools. Parents... I understand that the current environment where parents are their kids' best friends, that's a weird way to look at parenting, in my opinion. They can be, you can certainly be friendly with your kids.
Sure.
Should you be their best friends? I don't know. I don't think so.
I think overall, and just taking away the child component, I think we're all so overly addicted to these stupid things because it just became the norm. You know, I can sit there and take my phone and pull up anything I want. Now, there are certain things that I think are completely inappropriate for children. There's a sexual component there that shouldn't be there.
There's young women on all of these platforms exposing themselves, they think, to their boyfriends. And, of course, that's the beginning of that process.
Well, it's going both ways, too.
Yes, guys as well. I mean, uh-huh. I just want to pick on young women. But I don't think when you're young, I made mistakes. I was 25 stupid mistakes. So my wife straightened me out.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it's not even just young people. Older people make mistakes, too. But you don't have the technology in your brain, your gray matter, your thinking ability to understand what's risky and what's not risky. And when I see, and I'll dig it up during the break, rising suicides among teens, increase in online cyberbullying, all of this stuff. We have to do something here. And I think the something is, let's start talking about some of these things. We've got to take a break here. 855-616-1620. A lot of great calls, a lot of great texts. We'll do more of that after this. Stephen Carroll on this Monday talking about, unfortunately, a decision by more and more school districts across this country, Seattle, California, Ohio, probably soon to be in Wisconsin as well, to say, you know what, to these big social media tech giants, we don't want our kids on these platforms. I mentioned that the suicide is now the second leading cause, 15 to 24. Over the last decade or two, 56% increase in teen suicides.
Sure. Yeah.
Tremendous.
It's a problem.
Exposure to many things that young people may not be prepared for. Their brains still forming. Hell, there's adults whose brains are still forming. Let's talk to some adults. Sue from Waukesha joins us. Welcome to the show, Sue.
Hi, this is Sue from Waukesha.
Yeah, welcome.
I'm a grandma. And I have grandchildren in the Waukesha public school system. They use the YouTube channel in the classrooms as like an Encyclopedia Britannica, which I think is awesome. The kids have the benefits of all that knowledge. The problem is when the kids go home with their iPads, there is no way for the parents to put restrictions on that YouTube site. And so the kids can click, 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 and accidentally get into adult porn sites. And that would be the question I'd have for YouTube, not so much that we cut them out, but that is there a way that they can put parental controls or school controls on where the children can get to?
Yeah, it's a great question, Sue.
That's
thanks for the real life experience there as well, because yes, there's ways to limit everything.
Now, are these school ish?
It sounds like it, because I think Waukesha has that,
right?
Where the kids get the school issued iPads.
Then is it incumbent upon the school district, if you are going to hand these things out, you instill that before you hand it to the kid?
Yes, but there's ways of defeating all these things.
No, I realize that, but then how do we... Steve, I'm not trying to be argumentative. Well, maybe I am. I just don't know how you police this. I don't know how you police this.
I would argue that maybe the idea, which I understand why they do it, to let kids take these home with them, maybe it's not a great idea with this understanding, like caller just said, that they can access things they shouldn't be doing. Now, here's the dirty little secret about all this. Maybe not so dirty, not so much a secret. If you have YouTube TV like me, you can access YouTube on your TV.
Sure.
If you're a parent of young children, when you're not there, when their parents are out shopping or working and the kids are home, they can access all this stuff.
Of course they can.
Yeah.
Probably faster than you can.
Probably. They're more skilled at technology.
Well,
everything has changed. We didn't used to have that access. Now they do.
No. I mean, we had computer class every now and then, but they had all these restrictions on the school-run computers. Now, I just don't understand why that's not still happening.
Catherine joins us from Milwaukee. Welcome to the show, Catherine. You're on WTMJ.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hi there.
Hi.
You know, I heard what you said about the children's brains are still forming and they can't discern what's real and not real on social media, what they're seeing. And, you know, my mind right away went to the whole gender dysphoria issue, too, because young kids also cannot discern those sorts of things. And when they're hearing these things in the schools, sometimes by their teachers and definitely by their peers, I think it's incredibly confusing for the children, and their brains are not formed, and there's no way they can make decisions like that when they can't even sort through what's real on social media.
That's a great point, Catherine. Thanks for the call. You can hang up and listen on our discussion here. Those are all the things that kids are faced with now. All of these adult conversations.
Yeah.
And yeah. I understand there's some people that think young children should be exposed to it so they're more kind to people who are different. I get that argument. But if their brains can't process that information, if they're not developed enough, why would we have that argument? Why would we present that to them?
Well, I think one component of this that is, listen, I understand what you're saying, and then we that leads to another conversation of why are we teaching sex education to K-5? You know, I mean, that's ridiculous. Why are we doing that if we have to do this? I think it's almost even more difficult for younger people to realize that the minute you start posting this stuff, your digital footprint is set, and it's never going away. And the oversharing that maybe you are doing could come back to haunt you when you're an adult. And that's a big component.
And we always expect adults to make the right decisions, right? If they don't, we have laws, right? We have penalties.
We really do expect, I think.
Well, that's my expectation.
Oh,
now,
boy.
Other people don't seem to have the same expectation.
Dreamweaver.
That's a conversation for another day. But young people, brain's not fully formed.
They're going to do stupid stuff.
They're going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
That's part of being a young person. And this expectation that we can just flood them with all of this stuff. All of these resources that they never had access to before and expect them to always make the right call is foolish.
Well, and it's unrealistic to expect the parent is going to, when they bring these things home, like what she was just talking about, when they bring these things home, it's unrealistic to think that the parent is going to sit there and watch everything you do. Mom and dad have been at work. They're tired. They want to take a break and they want to relax a little bit. And so, okay, Timmy, you're on doing your YouTube stuff.
A couple people said I'm too hard on parents. Look, I understand. I was a parent. I am a parent. It is difficult. We had some of these same arguments at the beginning of all of this, the rise of technology, but not like it is today. And at the time, we put limits on our children, our daughters, that they couldn't do certain things at certain times. There were limits, reasonable, part of a conversation at the dinner table, which we still did. If you don't have those conversations, if you don't put those limits on some of this activity, are you surprised that we're seeing rising rates of suicide among teens? I'm not.
This is where you make an excellent point. Mark that down. I'm saying he made an excellent point. I think that it all starts with a conversation. And as a parent or as a whatever authority figure in your child's life, you need to start with the conversation and try and bring some clarity to the situation. Now, is that going to stop completely the bad behavior? Hell no. No. But it at least might pray, you know, plant a seed before they start doing some of this stuff. Oh, you know, I could be in trouble. And I think it is incumbent upon the authority figure or the parent to go and check the history, see what they're doing. And then you can have the conversation, too. Why did you do this?
Yes. Kids make mistakes. Do they learn from the mistakes? Well, only if you point them out to them. Otherwise, they just keep making the same mistake or worse mistake.
Yeah, if they don't realize that it's a mistake, they're going to keep doing it.
From the old National Bank talk and text line 920 area code, as a former educator who taught before there were cell phones and retired well after cell phones that entered our society, it is exhausting to fight with the students to have them put their cell phones away. It's so exhausting to parents who say that they need to be in contact with their children. It's very exhausting when other classroom teachers feel it's okay for students to use the cell phone as part of their learning environment. The battle is on so many fronts, and administrators certainly don't want to be dealing with parents in our schools. There's a lot in that.
Yeah, yeah,
text.
Yeah. No, and I very valid point. And to tell you the truth, no, you don't need to be in contact with your child. I think it's totally okay for school districts to say no cell phones in school. I don't care what kind of argument you're going to bring down the pike. If you need to get in touch with your child, or he needs to get in touch with you, we'll send him to the office, and they can call you or have the office come and get you. That's Pollyannish, isn't it?
That process worked forever.
Right.
Why does it not work now? So now we have to have immediate contact with our kids?
No.
No, we don't. Of course we don't.
You
want to know? That's the accepted behavior now.
Right.
So we're all supposed to sign on to that.
It's my mom again. No.
I don't want to be the grouchy old man, but on this one, I think adults, parents, school boards, school districts, even some kids and their peers are saying, our friends are dying. They're killing themselves. They're being bullied in ways we never imagined. Maybe, just maybe, we should go after the tech companies who are providing this easy platform for these things to take place in. That seems reasonable to me. Are you going to ban everything from everybody? No, of course not. But in some cases, removing dangerous
right.
tools from kids who may not know better, I think is a smart step.
To tell you the truth, I'd like the social media sites to start policing the advertisers. Because I think there's some, I get inappropriate ads all the time. It's like, why am I getting that? You know, and there's something in the code that gives it, and that happens to kids too. So I think the cyberbullying is a huge problem, but that's a conversation starter too.
I had this conversation with somebody the other day away from the show, actually right out here in the Third Street Market Hall. So much of life now is consumed by this, and I'm holding up my smartphone.
Exactly.
Our connection to it, our desire to see what's the latest. If you're on Facebook, all the reels, all that stuff. You know, I started watching Italian cooking.
Oh, there you go.
Now I'm bombarded with ads for Italian cooking and the Facebook reels. Look, that's healthy because I love to cook.
Right.
Not really, but I like to eat Italian food.
Yeah, but it's overwhelming. I don't need all.
My wife will laugh at that because I don't like to cook.
But that's overwhelming, too. After a while, that gets to be super annoying.
There's a love of technology. I'm one of the people that love technology. I think the biggest question that parents, school boards, all of us should ask each other is, we've got to get the break here because we're late. Are we allowing technology to take over and control our lives in destructive ways? I think the answer simply is yes. Smartphones, kids' access, impact on children, suicide rates, depression. So I was reading this story in Washington Post. San Mateo County Superintendent of Schools, San Mateo, California, said in an interview that social media use has left a mark on schools to the point where administrators have observed a spike in mental health emergencies during the day. So cyberbullying happening live during a school day, issues with mental health arise just because of that phenomena. Haven't gotten to all the other exposure pieces of the story where kids can look at horrifically dangerous things, violence, sexuality, yeah, that they may not be able to process in their still developing brains.
I think the bullying is a big component of this, too.
This has been something I've been talking about for years. There's too much still, which is kind of shocking to me. Wink, wink, nod, nod, that's what kids do, theory about this. I know adults that bully other people.
Sure.
It's not surprising.
No.
Those adults, their kids often end up being bullies.
Right. I just think that, once again, I know it's a Pollyanna kind of thought, but I think we need to start the conversation with our children and tell them exactly what is right and what is wrong and what they are doing with their social media platforms.
8 out of 10 kids in this country, it's 79%. 8 out of 10 have a smartphone. 13 to 17.
Teenagers. I don't doubt that.
Eight out of ten. And probably only because of rural areas, it's not even higher than that.
I was going to say, the other ones are Amish? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, not to pick on the Amish, but there's certain areas where you don't have good cell phone coverage, and there's a reason why you wouldn't have a smartphone in those areas. That's simple as that.
I just think we've got to somehow give them a break from all of this, and if that starts in the schools, fine. I think that, and once again, the authority figure needs to really step in. You have to. I used to check my kids' history all the time. All the time.
Yeah, your kids are younger than mine, so you had that technology as part of your
right
child raising. I didn't have that because we didn't have that at the time.
I mean, I would make sure, I would go on, and if there was some, and there I found a couple of things. Be aware, I did find a couple of things, but I'm like, hey, Alex, come here. What's this? And then it would be, here, let's talk about this, and let's understand what this is.
Is it, somebody made this point, and I'm going to paraphrase because I don't want to read everything they said, but is it the equivalent of, in my era, finding that Playboy magazine at somewhere and then everybody gathering around and looking at it? That's kind of the same, in a crude sense, the same thing as a bunch of young kids getting on their
kind of
buddy's laptop or iPad
kind of
or phone and looking
sure
at it. Yeah.
The only thing is that Playboy was at least stationary. Now you can actually find people that are,
you can share,
videoing themselves.
Yeah, which I understand that that's part of our culture now. Because moms are doing this. Dads are doing this. Everybody's making a video for something.
Yeah.
But for young people, and reading some of these stories, it's heartbreaking to find out that they're doing these things in some weird delusion of privacy. But once you hit send or enter.
That's the one thing that they
need. Gone.
One thing they absolutely need to understand is the digital footprint that they are making, because it will never, ever, ever go away.
Mike joins us from Illinois. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
We are good. What do you think?
So a lot of things. I remember me and my friends looking at our dad's Playboys, and yeah, you know, our moms were definitely not happy about that, but we did it anyway. You know, it reminds me, the social media reminds me a little bit of smoking, where when smoking first was going on, I don't think a lot of people knew it was bad. But then, you know, the government, as far as the health department got involved, telling people it was bad. You know, there was a huge campaign when I was growing up in the 70s about how smoking is bad for you. So, and that was in the schools. I completely agree that we should be able to control it in the schools. I know it's easier said than done, but, you know, it's also like television when, you know, a lot of people are starting to say television's bad for kids, and parents are able to control that. So I would think if they're paying for their kids' smartphones, they can control what they have access to. However, just like smoking and television and Playboys, there's always going to be a friend who's going to be able to do it.
Sure.
They're going to go over there. However, that doesn't mean we shouldn't do anything. And absolutely in the schools, we can police it.
Now, thanks for the call, Mike. I think he makes a great point. We got to get to break here, but I just want to get this in before the break. There are things we can do and the things we can't do. We can't control everything.
Right.
We can't even solve crime in Milwaukee or big cities across this country. Matter of fact, in many ways, we're going backwards. So that's a very complex problem that we haven't even wrapped our head around yet. Or all the other things, drunk driving in Wisconsin. You could pile on a list. I think this one's kind of important, because if you impact a child at a very young age where they're dealing with depression or lack of self-esteem or self-worth, those problems can actually grow exponentially as adults.
I was going to say it compounds, yes.
Yeah, so we have adults that aren't ready for adulthood. And that's why I'm concerned about it. And I thought Mike's last point was important. Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, these things are difficult. But not doing anything is too dangerous to even contemplate.
I think we start with the schools, for sure. I think the schools are the first place.
And that's what at least some school districts are saying. You know what? We're going to do something. And maybe that is, just like smoking, we're going to go after the big companies. Will it work? I guess we'll find out. I want to thank everybody for all that we had. Hundreds of texts on this, and we could stay on it for the whole 3 hours. I will revisit it. My takeaway is this.
Yes.
I'm glad that Congress, in their own unique way with hyper-politics, hyper-partisanship now, are at least looking at the problem, talking to the tech companies and their CEOs about this. I'm encouraged by school districts across the country that are saying to parents and to tech companies, we're looking at you. We see these rates rising. Again, I'll go back to that one stat I said before.
Right.
It used to be 10th among teens, 13 to 17, suicides, like a cause of death. Now second. That's a problem. 56% increase in the last 10 years. That's a problem that we need to address.
I told you off the air, and it's the truth. Every time I see that a young person has passed away, I always think, did they commit suicide? Because it's so prevalent.
Yeah.
And it's very sad.
And most of the time, you're right.
Yeah.
Break for news.
It's Monday, the most fun day of the week, right?
Ah, boy, here we go.
The best day of the week.
No.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard.
Joining Steve Scafidi, it's radio legend herself, Carol Kay.
You're like Oscar the Grouch sometimes.
Yeah, but in a nice way.
In a nice way.
She's a big fan of Brandon, Carol, and Debbie.
Oh, very nice.
I think she's a big fan of mine, too. She just doesn't want me to get a big head.
Well, Brandon's a stud, man. I mean,
let's take a break. I need some time to process what you just said. Hey, do your own thing. You do you, Carol.
Now broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue.
This is time to party.
Here's Steve and Carol.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to 10 o'clock hour Monday show on WTMJ, broadcasting live from the Avenue Studios.
Yes.
And beautiful. Thank you for that affirmation.
You know, and what's fun is being where we are, like I can smell the food starting to cook.
Yes, because they're gearing up for, I think they open at 11, is that right? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Great food here. And
if you haven't
been out here, I think I've eaten at all the places. Only once a week. I allow myself once a week to do that.
I've only eaten at the one, oh no, I've eaten at two places.
It's
so
addictive.
I gotta kick into high gear.
All right, so if you watch the Oscars, and I know we both did, and I came back to it after like 8 years of not watching. You watch it every year, I assume.
Yes, I do.
You saw that Brendan Fraser
won for Best Actor.
Yeah, formerly of Encino Man, and I don't even know what else he was
the
in.
The Mummy movies.
Oh, the Mummy movies. Yeah, that's probably more recent.
Yeah.
Encino Man was like one of his first movies.
Right.
He won Best Actor for The Whale, which depicts a very obese man, very fat man.
There you go.
Living in his apartment.
You're going to use that term.
I am going to use the term. So it's going to be what we're going to talk about here for in the next segment or two. The use of the term fats.
Yes.
And sort of tied to that is the term fat suits.
Right.
Or in the case of Brendan Fraser or other actors, actors who choose to wear fat suits when they're like thin actors or thinner actors. I wouldn't call Brendan Fraser thin, but they had to make him look
stuck.
Like he had 600
right.
pounds on his
right.
frame.
Right, right.
And why that's objectionable now.
See, this is where we are crossing the line as far as I'm concerned. Because Hollywood is being called out because they would prefer to put these people in a prosthetic suit so that they look to be an obese individual or a heavier individual. Mm-hmm, they did mm-hmm. it for Colin Farrell. They did it for Tom Hanks. They did it with Brendan Fraser. Instead of hiring a fat actor. Now, and that's in the article. I'm not saying fat actor just to be flippant. That's in the article.
Right.
Hire a fat actor. Now, first of all, don't we have to look at what the pool is? And if we're going to be this sensitive, I'm asking you, Steve, because I'm curious, then are we also ignoring the fact that some of these actors, like look at Christian Bale in The Machinist. He lost 60-some pounds.
Yeah, it was unbelievably thin.
Right. So, and Tom Hanks did it for Castaway, and you look at these. So are we ignoring the fact that these people are offensive to the anorexic community?
Maybe. Look at Robert De Niro in Raging Bull. He gained, I don't know how many pounds to be the fat guy, and then he
right.
obviously lost the weight.
But I don't understand why, what is so offensive and what is the sensitivity? Isn't that basically what Hollywood is? You've got these art directors and these makeup individuals, and they have to do this. This is their thing. Why do we have to go out and, you know, we're being offensive to the larger community because we're not finding a larger actor? Maybe that actor's not right for the part.
Maybe there's such a small pool of actors that we couldn't possibly do that. Why would we not let our greatest actors, not that Brendan Fraser is one of our greatest actors, but Tom Hanks in the case of Colonel Tom Parker in the movie Elvis, which also was nominated.
Yeah.
Why would we not give them the chance? That's what acting is. So I made him a show poll today.
Okay.
On Twitter, if you're on at 620 WTMJ or on mine at WTMJ Steve. Critics have objected to the use of that term, fat suits, and by the use of prosthetics in general, what do you think about it? No, it's called acting, 49%. That's about where I expected that to be.
Yeah.
This is an interesting one for me, and I've noticed as our show polls have grown in popularity and more people are voting, there's really distinct differences in the responses. Yes, it's shaming, 3.8%. I think that's where our country is at. It's not shaming. And only 3% of the people.
Well, it's only 3%,
yeah,
so that's a
small number. So I think America agrees. It's not shaming at all.
I don't understand that logic. Why would it be shaming?
Because we are now offended by the term fat.
We're offended by everything.
Exactly. And I always remind people that when you choose words that you now deem offensive, whether it's fats, give me, I can't think of another example off the top of my head, but there's dozens of them.
Sure. Stupid. You know, there's a bunch of them that they want to negate from our lexicon.
At the end of the day, they're all words. We have chosen to put a negative connotation on the word fat, so therefore now it's offensive. Whatever that new word is, weight challenged or whatever it is, I don't know what it is.
Won't that be offensive at some point?
Of course. You can't call them challenged by their weight. They're just living their best life.
Well, okay. But we have categories of individuals. You know, that's just the fact. You have people that are short. You have people that are tall.
Why is obese a better word than fats? It still sounds bad. Matter of fact, it might sound worse, but obesity is a thing. Is that now shamed out of use?
Obesity to me, that's a small portion of fat is more encompassing because to tell you the truth, you know, I'm heavier than I want to be right now, so I consider myself to be fat, and I have my fat pants, and I call them my fat pants. But then somebody else who's maybe like 50, 60 pounds overweight is still in that fat category. To me, obese is like 100 pounds plus.
Okay. Well, there's extreme obesity, and then there's some
right.
different varying levels of obesity. But correct me if I'm wrong. Those cells that in people accumulate on their waistlines, their belly, their butts, their legs, thighs, aren't those, isn't that still called fat?
Fat cells?
Yeah. Or are we gonna shame that one out of existence too? So it's called fat, but you can't call someone fat.
Well, what do we do with the commercials where they plunk the big blob of yellow
right.
and say, this is how much fat you have on you. This is 10 pounds of fat.
855-616-1611, the old National Bank talk and text line if you want to join us. Look, I understand. I don't want to shame anybody. But at the end of the day, these are words. I don't want to hurt someone's feeling. I probably wouldn't say to someone, you're fat. But to describe a group of people that are extremely obese as fat, I think is okay.
I just think that it's I kind of get a kick out of Hollywood being called out, but I'm with you in the fact that why is it bad to use these prosthetics if we have such a small pool of fat actors to pick from?
That's like a side issue. It's just
stupid.
Dumb. It's dumb.
Yeah, there's another word you were not supposed to use. Dumb.
Right. So what is it? Your brain is challenged.
I'm going to use dumb. I can't, you know, if I can't think of something
stupid,
right away or stupid, that's the words. Yeah, they're all right there, right at the tip of my tongue. That's what I'm
using the term idiot, but I use it selectively, and usually it really, really applies to the situation in which I use it in.
Well, this whole thing has just gotten to the, you know, it's from the sublime to the ridiculous. It's just, I don't care. Use the prosthetics. In fact, it's a really good sign of how good you are at your craft. I thought Brendan Fraser was completely believable.
Yes,
completely.
So from what I've seen, I've only seen snippets of it. So whether that's the term fat suits, I think it's far too much excitement, consternation, hand-wringing over something that certainly paints the picture, right?
Yeah.
For all of us.
Yeah.
And I know that we're very comfortable now in all body types because you see it in commercials now. They have, it used to be the thin supermodels, male or women.
Soup to nuts.
It's not that anymore. It's everything.
It's everything.
And I welcome that because that's frankly how most of us look.
It's actually more the norm. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But to just start willy nilly, just removing words from our lexicon or our language seems rather a bit of an overreach, in my opinion.
I would tend to agree with you.
All right, let's toss this one around for a few minutes.
855-616-1620.
Fat suits. Do they bother you? Because according to my poll, not many people think it's shaming. I agree. I don't think it is either.
No.
Quick break. WTMJ. I asked a question before the break, Carol. Do they not call that those cells around your waist for guys or whoever it is on women?
Sure.
They still call those fat cells, right?
I know I got a few on my butt.
Okay. Who doesn't?
Right? Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm sure some fat cells around any part of your body are probably a good thing. Butts. Speaking of butts, if there's a medical professional out there, somebody who works in healthcare, just tell me if I'm wrong. They're still fat cells, right? So if they're fat cells and you have a lot of them, wouldn't that not make you fat?
There's probably a medical term for them.
What would that be?
I don't know. I'd have to have a doctor call in. But, I mean, for, you know, the rest of the Madding crowd, it's just fat. And you know what? If you're fat...
You know you're fat.
You know you're fat. I'm telling you, I have my fat pants. I have fat pants at home. So when I put on a little bit, and I know that I've put on a little bit, I at least have a go-to so I'm not walking around pantsless. I have fat pants. So I put on my fat pants.
Maybe you need to refer to them as weight challenged pants now.
No, it's too much
more letters and more words.
That's too much work.
From the 262, I'm not offended by the words fat or obese. They are medical terms. I believe that. Now, there is a health care person out there who says fat cells equal, and I don't know if I'm saying the term right, It's spelled A-D-I-P-O-S-E tissue. Is that right? Adipose?
I don't have a medical degree. I don't know. Somebody would have to call in.
James from the South Side has a comment or two. Hi, James.
How you doing there?
Hi. Yeah,
would you guys call Shaq and Reggie and Gilbert Brown fat and probably end up on the ground because they'd probably flatten you?
I don't think they're fat. I mean, that's the first way I would answer that question.
But in terms, my term these days, and I've used it for a while, is wide body.
Sure.
All right.
Thanks for the call, James. Wide body.
Okay.
Heavily muscled.
I you know.
Thick. I'm a thick. That's
thick. Thick. That's.
I've been described
that's
as
even
thick.
Worse.
I've had that description. You're thick.
I know. I just think that at some point in time, it just gets to be a little ridiculous. I'm with you. I'm in your camp in the fact that these words paint a picture. And, you know, if you say to me something, weight challenged means nothing to me. That's like air. It means nothing to me. Weight challenged. What is that? Too thin? Too heavy? You know, but if you say fat, I got it. And does this translate? I'm sorry. We're going to go to a caller, but does this also translate overall? Like if you go up to somebody and their dog is overweight, do you say, your dog's fat? Is that going to be offensive to the dog?
No. It's like the word hungry is not, they don't want people to use the word hungry. It's food challenge, I think, or something like that.
What?
Yeah. Hungry's a bad word now.
Well, you know what? I'm going to say it. I'm smelling the food and I'm hungry. There. I don't care.
I'm very hungry because I'm going on a protein bar. That's all I've had.
Okay.
Very hungry. Mike joins us from Heartland. Are you hungry?
Hey, Mike.
Mike, are you hungry today?
I'm always hungry. That's the problem.
All right. So you are a current RN. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
I am. And I worked in surgery. We did a lot of liposuction. So we call them lipo challenge people. But the correct term is adipose tissue. So
how long has that been the case?
What's that? Adipose tissue?
Yes. Has that been forever? Because I've never heard the term until today.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Nobody uses the medical term for it, but that's what they call it.
So okay. If I was talking about that tissue and I said those are fat cells, would I be wrong or what would I be?
No, you're correct because it's a layman's term for adipose tissue is fat.
Okay.
Right? So fat cells and everything. So it's just, you know, everyone's trying to cancel everything. So that's why we just say they're lipo-challenged.
There you go.
Thanks for the call, Mike.
Okay.
They are trying to change everything.
All right, now,
and I don't like it.
I'm
if you can't tell.
No, it's completely evident. Now, let me ask you this. Because does this also translate into, like, cookbooks and stuff? Because I know that a lot of Southern cooks, they'll say, you have to fry chicken in fat.
Render the fat.
Render the fat.
Uh-huh.
Chicken. So, I mean, only in certain situations is it going to be offensive? Okay.
Look,
I'm out.
I think what people are trying to get to is, like, I would never go to someone and say, you're fat.
No.
But in a general sense, which is what I'm talking about, if people are overweight, they're fat. I'm not going to direct that at one person. That would be shaming. But I'm in the general sense that I would describe, and I've fallen into this, people that are overweight, they're fat. And any word can be used to be negative or positive, depending on its usage. So in the individual sense, yeah, probably wouldn't do that. General sense, what's the harm?
I mean, the only thing that I would possibly do is if I had a family member that was bordering on being fat, I might say, hey, you know what? Why don't we go for a walk? Why don't we get a little, you know, let's move around more and eat a little less,
mm-hmm.
you know, and suggest something to them. But I would never go up to anybody and say, you're fat.
You know why? Because you're not rude and you have feelings.
Well, I was fat once.
There you go.
I was fat once. I was 240 pounds.
Chunky.
Fat.
She's Caroline Steve. It's Monday here on WTMJ. When that music plays on a Monday on my show, you know, it's indicates, Carol Kane, that we're going to talk to Dave Spano, president and CEO of Annex Wealth Management, next.
Yeah.
That moment has come. Dave Spano, welcome. Happy Monday.
Hi, Dave.
Happy Monday to everyone.
Also host of Money Talk Heard every Saturday morning on WTMJ. All right. Decision day, Dave, on Wednesday, the Fed. What do we expect? What are your thoughts?
Well, the Fed really doesn't have too many good options, right? So there's about a 50% chance that they do nothing. In other words, they don't raise the interest rate. There's about a 50% chance they raise it 25 basis points. About a week ago, it was 80% chance that they were going to raise it 50 basis points. So that's where the betting odds are moving all over. And really, the reason why I say they don't have too many good options is because they're trying to fight inflation. And at the same time, there is this brewing financial crisis with some bank issues. And so they're really in a predicament. So what do they do with that? If they raise rates, that further exasperates what's happening with the financial crisis with an inverted yield curve. But if they don't do anything, what does that suggest and what does that signal to the market? So really, what do they do? And then more importantly, what do they say after the meeting, after the announcement, will be really important, especially the questions that Fed Chairman Powell takes.
Can you clear up some of the Social Security insurance and Medicare issues for me? I mean, I know that Nikki Haley came out recently and she proposed raising the retirement age for Americans in their 20s as a way to help reform Social Security. Can you kind of, I'm all muddied about this. Can you kind of clear it up as to when we can apply?
Well, the rules haven't changed. I mean, there's some political speak right now because, as we know, in 2032, and this is something that hasn't changed, Carol, since President Clinton was in office, that they said in the early 2030s that there would be financial strife connected to the Social Security system. And so, you know, but if you think about it, what they're trying to do, there's really two levers that they're trying to pull. Either they're going to delay, which is the liability side, or they're going to increase the revenue to it, and that's the asset side to it. So they're going to probably pull one lever or the other, or a combination of both. So right now it's conversation, Carol. The rules have stayed the same that they have been this year. So I wouldn't worry too much about it. And we see that a lot. You know, people anticipate that there might be tax changes that never come. So you have to work with the facts and circumstances that you have today. But they probably are going to increase the retirement age for younger people. Carol, you and I are not in that group, but right now, you know, pushing that off is probably a conversation that'll happen over the next decade.
Dave, we talked last Monday about the saving of a couple banks in the United States. Now we see the story from the bank based in Switzerland. Is it Credit Suisse?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Credit Suisse and UBS, yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
should we take away from what happened here and what's now happening in Europe that there is a growing concern about banks?
Well, first of all, what's happening with Credit Suisse, I mean, that has been a story for a long time. That's not something that's just popped up over the last 30 days. Credit Suisse has been, I mean, for years and years, they have been on the watch list. And so now what's happened over the weekend, there is a shotgun wedding of sorts. The UBS is United Bank of Switzerland, UBS is and Credit Suisse are getting forced together. UBS said they're going to clean up the Credit Suisse's lending policies and their balance sheet, and so it is trading at a significant discount. But your question is, are we seeing financial institutions under strife? And there's no doubt that what we've seen, we saw two or three bank failures, depends on how you look at it here in the United States. And so the Fed, who not only has to fight inflation, also is the Federal Reserve Bank. And, of course, they have to oversee these banks. So right now, what are we looking at? We're looking at some institutions, and we're going to have to do some forensic studying on what happened with the Silicon Valley Bank. Did they really mismanage, which has really been the story, mismanage their balance sheet? Because what banks do, Steve, is they borrow on the short term, shorter term loans, and then they lend it out longer. And so when the yield curve is inverted, that puts pressure on the banking system. This is what I will tell you, having lived through the financial crisis in 2008, I remember September 15th, 2008, when the money markets were breaking the buck. There was cascading failures of financial institutions. That's not where we are today. The banks are in much better position in general. Are there outlier banks? No question about it. Are there going to have to be some change in regulation? That conversation is accelerating for sure. But, you know, we need to look at it, but it's not what we saw in 08 and 09. I think the banking industry in general is in better shape and has been better managed. You know, what happened back then was lending. I mean, there was a lot of loans to a lot of people who couldn't afford to make them. What we're seeing today is the assets that they have on their balance sheet are just being mismatched.
Dave Spano joining us, president and CEO of Annex Wealth Management. So big picture stuff, consumer confidence, whether that's confidence to buy stocks versus sell, whether it's to put money into your bank or withdraw it in large amounts. How do we impact consumer confidence when we hear conversations about inflation, recession, all of these warnings all the time? I think that's a tough battle to win.
And it is. And, of course, let's go back to where we were. The economy was just cranking along, and that is part and parcel. I mean, I do blame in large part the Federal Reserve with easy money policy for too long. But in part and parcel, we had an economy that was just cranking. And that is why we had inflation. And so now they're trying to wring inflation out. And that means slowing down the economy. They slow down the economy by raising interest rates. And now you're going to have banks are probably going to get tighter with their lending standards, which will further slow down the economy. So there's no doubt that the economy is looking to slow down as we head into the end of 23 and early 24. But you nailed it. Consumer confidence is really the key of how you go into a recession. It's when people stop spending. And that is what happens. And if consumers stop spending, then you have negative GDP. And that's the definition of a recession. So if you start to see this slowing down because of lack of confidence, not only by consumers, but those in the boardrooms who say, I think we're gonna hold off on hiring somebody. We're going to hold off on capital expenditures, CapEx. If they start to do that, that further inflames the situation. So I think you're right on it, Steve. That is what we're seeing is a slowdown in confidence. But that doesn't mean that we're going to have a recession. It's highly likely, but there is a possibility that we get by with just a slowing economy and more of a stagflation economy, a stagnant economy with higher inflation. That scenario is setting up as well. All of the reason why, if you're a small business, if you're a corporation, if you're an individual investor, you have to know how your portfolio is comprised, what is in it, why you have it, how much you're paying for it. Now more than ever, you need to have a really tight, elite wealth management firm on your side.
And one of those, the one I recommend, Annex Wealth Management, their leader, their CEO, their president, all the titles, all the time. Dave Spano, thanks for joining us.
Good, thanks.
Bye, Dave.
Absolutely.
Yeah, first day of spring, enjoy it.
Yeah, vernal equinox is what they call it. So happy spring, everybody. Thank you, Dave Spano. We'll take a break. After the break, I heard this over the weekend.
Okay.
We've been talking about some serious things, but we need a little lighter topic.
We're going to go light?
A message for Packers fans, not from me, but from someone else.
Okay.
We're going to play that for you.
Got it.
And it's not in its entirety, but a good chunk.
Okay.
Maybe it's something we need to listen to.
Okay.
All right. You ready for that, Carol?
I am
ready too. Hopefully you're ready for it. We'll do all of that after this on WTMJ. All right, Carol Kane, so we had the big news last week. Aaron Rodgers wants to play for the Jets. Details to be determined.
Yeah.
Still working it out.
I loved listening to Mark Tosher just rip into him, and I was like, good for you.
I don't get that worked up about it. I love Aaron Rodgers, but for me, it's like I need a clean break.
I think most of us are in that camp.
Yeah, clean break.
His whole thing was just the fact of he's held us hostage. He's holding everybody hostage, and he wasn't in agreement with that.
Yeah, so, you know, at some point, I would imagine between now and the NFL draft, which is in April, they'll come to some agreements, whether that's a first-round pick, second-round pick.
I don't know.
Third round. It all get worked out.
Sure.
Bottom line is, we're all in for Jordan Love. I think most of us Packers fans, right? We're excited about him.
Of course.
A young man, give him a chance.
Sure.
Now, I was listening to this over the weekend. NFL Network, Kyle Brandt.
Okay.
And he focused on sort of a message. I'm not going to play the whole thing because it's long. It's like 5 minutes long. But a couple minutes of this, sort of a message to Packers fans about this storyline that we've all been consumed
sure.
with in
the last situation.
Yes, in the last couple of weeks. Let's listen to the young man, Kyle Brandt.
Be very careful celebrating the departure of Aaron Rodgers and doubling down on celebrating prematurely the excellence of Jordan Love. You don't want to do that. I was listening to some radio calls this morning to ESPN Radio in which different ladies and gentlemen were saying, thank God Aaron is leaving. We can now get the Ferrari out of the garage that is Jordan Love. You know why I say it's just breaks my heart? You find people in that incredible state don't know what it's like to not have a Hall of Fame quarterback. You don't even know what it's like to have merely a Pro Bowl quarterback, a guy who's limited, but man, really good here and there and makes the Pro Bowl sometimes. You don't even know what that's like. You don't know what it's like to have a 7.5 or 8 out of 10 quarterback. You don't. And I'm not just talking about the young people. I'm not talking about the kids. There are adults among you with families of their own, parents, who have never taken one breath of Wisconsin air that doesn't include the life of having a Pro Bowl and All-Pro and Hall of Fame quarterback. You've never lived a second. You don't know it. You don't remember the magic man, Don Majkowski. You don't remember before that. You were born during the Favre era, Favre ascension, and you have just coasted for years. I saw Aaron Rodgers was talking to Pat the other day, and he said, Jordan has done an incredible job on the look squad. That's the endorsement. I looked over at my cohort, Jason McCourty, who played 13 years in the league. He's like, that doesn't mean anything. The look squad is, you're in practice and some assistant coach holds up a grease board that approximates whatever the Lions are going to run them in this that coming Sunday. And then Jordan Love kind of simulates it and soft tosses it to some running back and lets the starting Packers linebacker wrap him up. It's the look squad is not going out on a Sunday and trying to beat a real NFL team. I'm rooting for Jordan Love. It'd be incredible. But that the celebrating Rodgers on the way out, I get it on a personal level if you're sick of it. Don't you think you might miss Aaron Rodgers on the football field a little bit? What happens when you start 0-3 next year and Love is just floundering and Aaron Jones is getting swarmed and none of the receivers can get open and Watson's dropping things? I'm not rooting for it. I truly am not. But I'm not expecting it to go great. Why would it? What indication do we have that it's going to go that great? If the Packers could barely win games last year with Rodgers, do you think Love's going to come in and start cooking?
Okay, a couple of things. One, I agree with almost everything he said.
Mm-hmm.
So many of Packers fans have just lived under the Favre and Rodgers era.
Yeah, I'm not going to deny that. I'm not going to deny that at all. But, you know, give Jordan Love a chance. Just give him a chance. If we start, are we going to be disappointed if we're 0-3 if we start the season like that? Yeah, of course we will. But we stuck it out last year, so
we
whatever.
Didn't make the playoffs this year with Aaron Rodgers, so you have to give the guy a chance.
All right, yeah, give him a chance. I'm not going to overestimate his skills right away.
The problem we have is one generated by media and fans. So all the hot takes in sports, everybody's got a hot take in sports. There's like 8 billion shows with 8 billion hosts,
mm-hmm.
all spouting out their supposed knowledge about pro football, or in
sure.
this case, pro football, or any sports. And then with the fans who have gotten used to this incredible high level of quarterback play Green Bay.
We've been very, very lucky, yeah.
So to expect that to continue is a little bit delusional. Could they be good? Sure. Jordan Love could be great. We don't know anything about that. As he said, practice is practice. Games are games. When the other side is trying to kill you in a live regular season football game, much different scenario than
right, of course.
A practice where you're protected wearing a red jersey. So let's not get too far down the road of Jordan Love will be fantastic. Let's see what we got.
I just think that he did hit the nail on the head when he said, are you sick of it? I think that's why we are celebrating at least that it's over, because we're sick of it. We've been beaten over the head with this, and it's just like, just go then. If you want to go to the Jets, go to the Jets. I personally think he's going to fail miserably at the Jets.
Well, we'll see.
Everything's in the future. We don't know. I can't read the future. I'm not that way.
So a little bit of Kyle Brandt from NFL Network. I actually agree with almost everything he said, and I think that's where we should be thinking. The details will be determined. He will end up with the Jets or somebody else. I think the chance of him playing for the Packers ever again
nil
or zero, you know, point whatever.
Yeah.
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 0001.
No, he's gonna go to the Jets. They're already welcoming him in New York City.
Yeah. Maybe we'll tell that story if we have time after the break.
Okay.
Big news for restaurant goer Aaron Rodgers.
Yep. I'll tell it.
Let's break. So we're waiting for the big Aaron Rodgers trade announcement at some point. That's probably the last I'm going to talk about it until we get something like that. But you found this story about things looking up on the dining side of things.
Yeah, this celebrity private investigator is welcoming Aaron Rodgers. He belongs to Rouse. It's literally the most exclusive restaurant in New York City. And you can make a reservation, but it might take years to get there. Mm. It's so hard to get a reservation. But he has a standing appointment at this place every Thursday night. And so he's like, if he becomes a Jet, he's going to be my guest and we will go and dine there. And nice. I was just like, and Aaron Rodgers, you know, he'll take him up on it. It is the hardest restaurant to get into in New York City. So this guy's like, I'm going to celebrate him. And I'm like, okay, whatever. We're starting to butter him up already.
I'm fascinated by the Aaron Rodgers story because there's already this narrative that the media is going to beat him up. He's pretty good at handling the media. At least he thinks he is. And I'm pretty sure that he's going to enjoy the New York lifestyle as a single male.
Oh, yeah.
Pro football quarterback.
Without a doubt.
I don't know that there's a downside to that. All right. We'll take a break for news. Lots more to get to. 11 o'clock hour coming up. Stephen Carroll. News is next.
It's Monday, the most fun day of the week, right?
Ah, boy, here we go.
The best day of the week.
No.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard.
Joining Steve Scafidi, it's radio legend herself, Carol Kay.
You're like Oscar the Grouch sometimes.
Yeah. But in a nice way.
In a nice way.
She's a big fan of Brandon, Carol, and Debbie.
Oh, very nice.
Well, I think she's a big fan of mine, too. She just doesn't want me to get a big head.
Well, Brandon's a stud, man. I mean...
Let's take a break. I need some time to process what you just said. Hey, do your own thing. You do you, Carol.
Now broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue.
This is time to party.
Here's Steve and Carol.
I think three times is enough for that intro, don't you? I've heard enough of that. Retire that one.
You're counting how many times?
Oh, I keep track of everything. Everything is documented and put in an Excel spreadsheet.
Whatever happened to just
nice
willy-nilly
living
life on the fly? What? Whatever happened to that? You're too strict. You're too rigid.
Yes.
You've got to just be...
Rules, Carol. Rules matter.
Sometimes you got to throw the rule book out the window and just go for it.
You mean like Donald Trump? Oh, see what I did there?
There you go.
So big week for Donald Trump, apparently, because he's alluded to the fact.
He says some illegal messages were released, and he's going to get arrested tomorrow for the Stormy Daniels thing.
No one's confirmed that, of course.
No.
And we're going to simplify it, because I don't want to get bogged down in the details of it. I know that this is a court case, one of several court cases that the ex-president and former president is facing, having to do with this Stormy Daniels situation. The documents found at Mar-a-Lago, and of course his trying to influence Georgian election officials in the aftermath of the 2020 presidential election.
Right.
So that's all swirling around, as well as some other things as well.
Okay.
So, I guess what I want to do in the next 20 minutes or so is kind of look at the story in a different way. What is going to happen? I don't think any of us know, right? We assume indictments because the president has basically said that, former president, in his posts.
Right. He's exhausting for me.
Yes. And I don't really bring him up that much anymore because, frankly, he's a former president, not a current president.
This will be the first time that a former president has been indicted, right?
Correct, if that's what happens.
Okay. All right.
All signs, at least in New York City and Manhattan to be specific, point to that happening sometime in the future related to his payments, hush or otherwise, to porn actress Stormy Daniels.
Yeah.
And then the repayment of that bill that was paid by his attorney at the time, whose name escapes me for the sec, Cohen.
Okay.
They had to repay him, and it was kind of a weird situation where they had to cover that cost. The attorney paid for it first, then the Trump organization repaid those payments.
Yeah.
That's about as far into the details as I want to go. What I'm fascinated by, all of this and all of the other stories, do any of these indictments or charges impact those of you who like Donald Trump and want to vote for him again in this run-up to 2024? I'm curious what those people are thinking.
Well, I think it could go either way. I mean, if he's indicted, you might have his base might just get inflamed. And he would, you know, be their guy. Or it could go the other way. If he's indicted, you've got other people who may have voted for him before that go, no way in hell am I voting for him again. He's a criminal. So I think it's a seesaw. It could go either way. I don't know.
Which of those two groups do you think would be bigger? The ones that are just defending no matter what, or the ones that say that was the last straw, I'm done?
You know what? That's a really good question, because it's a very difficult thing to kind of like take into consideration, just because of the fact that I don't know how many people, closeted people there are out there that are just disgusted with him because they're not the vocal. They're not the vocal ones. We know that his base, really stringent base, love him and would probably want to absolutely march him to the White House if he got indicted. But I don't know how many people are in that other camp. Do you? I don't.
The second camp?
The camp. I think there are an awful lot of people who voted for Trump but aren't going to vote, have no intention of voting for him again, but they're not the vocal, the loud group. So you don't know who they are.
I think that group is smaller. Let's say if Donald Trump has, at this moment, 25, 30, maybe 40% of the Republican base voting that would vote for him again. That's today, not pending whatever happens after today, indictment or indictments. And there's another group that says, I've had enough. I've seen enough. I talked to a lot of people in that camp.
Yeah. Right?
On the show, away from the show.
Right.
Yeah, I voted for him twice. I'm done with him. Who's next?
Right.
That's the problem with all of this, is whatever your feelings are for Trump, whether you love him, hate him, put up with him, which is probably a lot of people, does he realistically have a chance to win, not just get the nomination, but win the election, given all of this? My answer is easy. No.
I don't think he does either.
Because you have to get independents. You have to get those marginal Republicans who often either stay home or don't vote for Republicans all the time.
I can't, at this particular juncture, I can't begin to wrap my head around the fact that he could be the nominee. It just doesn't compute. I just can't see it happening.
Well, it's stunning on its face. If a former president is indicted once or more than once, all of that is uncharted territory when it comes to running for president, trying to win the nomination first, and then winning the office. Uncharted
right.
territory. Hasn't happened.
If he's indicted and there's a trial and he's convicted, he can't run, right?
Even that's, if he's convicted of a felony, some people say no, but some people argue that's not the case. And I'm not a legal expert, so therefore I'm not going to weigh in on that. I don't know. It okay. sounds like he wouldn't be able to, but there's also people that say the charges in Manhattan have been upped to be a felony for the very sole reason of making sure that he doesn't run. But again, that's not absolute.
Well, and, you know, because you sent me this article, and I mean, if he gets indicted, he's calling out his party faithful, you know, protest. You know, this is, and I'm like, oh, please, can you just stop? We don't need another January 6th. We don't need marching in the streets. We don't. So, but he's inciting these people.
Similar to what happened in the run-up to January 6th, I believe he is deliberately doing that. Yes.
Yes.
Now, some level-headed Republicans have said, absolutely don't do that. But as you know, Carol, there's a lot of crazies in this world.
Yes.
So I look at it this way, and maybe we share this opinion, maybe we don't. For sure he's going to run, regardless, because...
Well, he's already declared, so yeah.
Donald Trump always uses campaigns for president as a chance to raise money. That's not going to change. He'll sell anything, including his own soul probably, to be president again. It would be a validation for him in what he's trying to do. Save the text about there's things I like about Trump. I get the policy stuff. There are even his things he did that I like. So that's not the point. The point is, in America right now, we have a real life situation where a president's former could be indicted once, twice, three times,
yeah,
or maybe not at all. because let's keep all the options open, yet is still going to run for president. Uncharted territory. And when I asked the question, does it make you more or less likely to support him? I think I have the answer to that. And I'm not buying what people are selling, which I heard a lot of this weekend. If you do this, he will win the presidency. I'm not buying what you're selling. I think that's crazy talk. And in some ways, a veiled attempt at cheerleading for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Almost the I dare you to do this argument. I'm not buying that.
The faithful for him will vote for him no matter what. Doesn't matter. That's just a blind following. But I still believe that there's a lot of like reasonable people out there that maybe did vote for him. I think there's a lot of people that voted for him and have just said, no matter what, I don't care. I'm not voting for him again. Period. I have to believe that. I have to believe we can find somebody better. Come on.
855-616-1620, the old National Bank talk and text line. I'll leave before we go to break with this text from Sam. For the people still supporting Trump, there's nothing Trump could do to lose their support. Nothing. Love the show, Stephen Carroll. Quick break. Get ready to rock Milwaukee. Dave Mason, special guest. The Outlaws are coming to town May 18th. Dave Mason left Traffic in 1969 to pursue a solo career. 100 songs, 3 gold albums, Alone Together, Dave Mason. Platinum album, Let It Flow, which contained the top 10 single, We Just Disagree. Famous Dave Mason song. More than 40 years of music, the Southern rock legends, the Outlaws, celebrated triumphs and endured tragedies to remain one of the most influential and best-loved bands of the genre. Want to go see them? Here's your chance. Right now, 855-616-1620. Caller number five to 855-616-1620. Get to see both Dave Mason and special guest the Outlaws at the Pabst Theater in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. Call now, 855-616-1620. Dave Mason is awesome.
That would be a really good show. I love the Outlaws,
yes,
for sure.
Yes, that's a bonus.
Yeah.
Extra added bonus, which we are happy to deliver. First chance to win, 4 more chances after today. You got to listen from 9 to noon right here on my show on WTMJ. All right, getting back to the phone lines. They like that giveaway. Somebody said to me in the text on the text line, 855-616-1620, why are you so sensitive about what he does? Let his policy shine through. The people that obsess over his other qualities, let them keep complaining while the adults get things done. I don't buy that argument.
No.
Is there obsession with him? Sure. Yeah.
Won't go away. That's why people are obsessed with him, because he's just constantly in your face. That's what's so off-putting for me, because he's constantly in my face. And it's just like, I don't care who you are. You're going to do that to me. I'm not paying attention to you.
I'm going to make a general statement. Donald Trump is a bully. He always has been a bully.
Yeah, okay.
And here's the part that's sort of controversial. There's a segment of our population that likes bullies. They just like them. They like to be the tough guy. They like to be the tough woman. They like to be the Karens. They want to own every situation. Donald Trump plays to that.
Well, because they're bullies themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and he satisfies that need.
You gravitate towards what you are like and what you accept, and I stand by that. You could write me and tell me I'm nuts, but probably that's a word that we're not supposed to use either. But I just think. Yeah, you're right.
And I'll save the text. I'm not saying everyone that voted for Trump is a bully. I'm saying some of that lingering support for the president is because of that reason. They like to push people around. We all know people like this.
Sure.
They're abrasive. They're in your face.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them run companies.
Mm-hmm. A lot of them run companies. Why do you think some people are so successful?
Now, I don't think this guy's a bully, but he's also said Elon Musk, the second richest guy in the world now, used to be first, has said that if Trump is convicted and arrested, automatically he will win the next election in 2024. Not just the nomination, but the election in 2024.
When he
completely
says,
disagree.
By a landslide.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, no way. I don't know what in the world you're thinking of, because I just think that there are way too many people that were, like I said, the last segment, I just have the hopes that there are way too many people that are just off-put and just say, no, I'm not voting for you anymore.
From the 920, I voted for Trump, but can't we find somebody that has good policies and doesn't have to get in trouble with the law? How about somebody that does similar things on the policy side that doesn't have the abrasive qualities of a Trump. Unless, as I just said, part of the winning formula for you is to shout down, push around, bully other people, i.e., Squawk Radio, Squawk TV, that's what they do.
I'm telling you, there's got to be something better. I cannot believe that there is not something that's going to come out in the next year or so. Somebody, and you just go, oh, a breath of fresh air, and smart. There, I don't know who, don't ask me, but I would never vote for Donald Trump.
Well,
never.
One of the opportunities will be Ron DeSantis. Will he be that person?
Right.
Perhaps.
I don't know.
He's never run on the national stage before.
But a lot of people have problems with him, too.
Of course. We should have problems with all elected officials because many of them are just throwing shade and are knuckleheads.
Right.
Just wasting our time and energy. From the text line, Old National Bank talking text line 414. I wish I could agree with you, but every time I turn around, more people are supporting Trump. I wouldn't be surprised if he's the nominee and gets reelected. I hope not, because I feel he's a danger to our country. There's a lot of people that feel that he is a danger. But here's the thing. Essentially, two men, maybe a woman at some point, are running for president. Because the third parties aren't going to win at this moment. In the future, who knows? So it's going to be a Democrat or Republican. And it could be, just like the last one, Biden-Trump. Those are the choices. Could Donald Trump win? Sure. Could Biden win re-election? Absolutely.
Yeah, you can't tell. Nobody can tell. And now let me ask you this. Who do you think he would pick for a running mate? Because obviously Pence is out.
Well, there's a couple names being thrown out.
And
how about Carrie Lake?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. How about Kristi Noem from South Dakota?
Okay.
I think he's going to pick a woman this time. I could be wrong. He picked Pence last time. But I think the Republican Party, led by Ronna McDaniel and several other people that we've had on the show, are understanding the importance of diversifying the base, diversifying the elected officials that are putting their name out on these ballots. They have to get women involved. Nikki Haley, of course, is also running for president.
Right.
And right now she's polling at like 12%.
Yeah, no, she's not going to make it.
Now, if Trump got blown up and DeSantis got blown up, perhaps. Who knows?
I have to, honestly, I'd have to talk to a lawyer to tell you the truth, because if he's indicted and arrested and convicted, I want somebody to be able to clear up whether or not he can run. If he could win.
Like every question in this country, it's open to interpretation. That's the problem. Everything seems so definitive. Oh, if you have a felony, you can't run. Oh, really? Let me challenge that. Let me challenge it all the way to the Supreme Court, which we know is now dominated by conservatives. They may have a different take than the previous lineup of Supreme Court justices.
Oh, God.
That's why this is important. My bottom line is this. If you get indicted and convicted...
I don't think you should be.
I don't think so either. That's not, in my terms, the qualities I want in a president.
No.
That's just me.
No.
And perhaps it's you as well. Got a break. After the break, news... You're listening to WTMJ. Congrats to Kathy from Waukesha, our winner, first winner of a 5-day giveaway. Pabst Theater, Dave Mason, The Outlaws. Four more chances to win sometime between 9 and noon, Monday through Friday, right here on WTMJ.
I got to tell you, if you say that there's nothing to do in this city, you're not getting out enough.
Right? Yes.
We always have stuff going on and great music venues.
And great restaurants, which we won't get to today, but we were talking about before the show. We've got so many options.
Right.
Of all kinds.
Exactly.
We were talking about steak places. So I saw this over the weekend, and I thought this kind of sets up something I've been wanting to talk about for a while. Like, I'm going to ask you some questions about how you use money.
Go ahead. Bring it.
So how do you... like buy things? Is there like a rule, like over a certain amount you use credit, under you use cash? Do you carry a lot of cash, which I don't know if you want to answer or not? Do you still use cash in the same way you used to?
I got $130 in this envelope right now.
Is that for me?
No.
Oh.
You know what? I do a lot of cash. I'm a cash girl. I really am. I would prefer, because with me, I'm not, you're very disciplined. Very disciplined. I am not. and I don't keep track, and there's nothing worse for me than at the end of the month, I get that bill, and I go, crap, I forgot I did this, I forgot I did this, and I forgot I did it. Now, that being said, I do have, and I got it just for the rewards, and if I'm going to use a credit card, I will use my Chase Sapphire.
Right, because you get something back.
I put my medical bills on it.
Hmm.
And then I paid it off immediately, and I immediately got all these miles, all these points that can be. I've got at least two flights in this thing.
Where are you going?
Anywhere.
Where are you going?
I don't know. I may. All of a sudden, you're going to go on your trip in Italy and turn around, and I'm going to be waving at you. So I'm a cash girl. What about you?
I rarely use cash for anything.
Okay.
I use cash for tips, basically. Because I like to just pay the bill. I like to know, this is the, you're talking about discipline. I wasn't always this way, but I am now. Like every day, I know every cent that I spent. I check my bank statements. I check my, if I use a credit card, I check my
credit. Oh, Lord,
even
no.
If I don't use my credit cards, I check my statements every day.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't want erroneous charges. I just don't want anything.
I don't.
And there's a special thrill looking at your credit card statement and it says zero for me, which is great.
Well, I do use, I can tell you how many times I've checked my online credit. Zero.
Really?
Never done it. But I do have, like, one of my U.S. bank credit cards is the one that I gave to my insurance company, and that's an automatic withdrawal, as is my car payment. Automatic withdrawal, and it goes on a credit card. Fine. That's fine. I know what that is. I know what to expect with that credit card. But just overall, and see, this is why cashless is crazy, makes me crazy, because I constantly want to drag out the bills, and I'm, oh, no, we have to use a card. I'm like, dang.
So your argument is that if you use cash, you control your spending?
Yes, very much so.
And my argument, the reason I don't use it is I want to know to the cent what I spent, when I spent it, and where I spent it.
But I'm not disciplined enough to do that, and I know I'm not. I know I would get smacked with a big bill at the end of the month. I'd be like, and I will admit this to you, and everybody else, I'm flighty enough that I just forget it.
Hmm.
You know, I'm so a true Sagittarius. I just do not keep that stuff, and it's just not in my nature. Just not.
So why this came up is this Facebook post basically saying we should use cash everywhere. Now, the reason, I'm not going to say the name because I don't want to bombard this woman, but it's basically that when you use cash over and over again, it kind of keeps our economy going. There's no extra charges. We know that when you use credit at a business, they pay a fee.
Right.
Now, some places, maybe wisely or unwisely, depending on your opinion about credit, they pass that on to us. I've seen that on bills, too, where they just pass the fee on.
Well, I got to, and because we were talking about restaurants and things before the show, and we were talking about steak places, and there are some pricey places around here. I would make sure, say, and some of the more pricier ones, you guys know which ones they are. I would make sure that I walked into that restaurant with six $100 bills.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Instead of putting it on a card.
Hmm.
Yeah. Without a doubt. Unless I have a gift card. I always have the cash on me. Always.
So you know in advance where you're going. Obviously, you know if you're going to a steak place that requires a reservation, you know in advance. But you always want to have the cash that you need for that situation that day.
Yeah, I would go to the bank and take it out of my savings account.
That would not be me. And I'm curious, 855-616-1620, how you manage your money. And do you buy into the argument? Because I do think we are moving in the cashless direction.
I know we are, and it's very frustrating for me.
Now, I also don't think it's going to be absolute for some of the reasons I talked about. Tipping is one of them. So what do you think on this? I use it, my money, in a different way than Carol does. We're both getting to the same point, managing our budgets, right?
Uh-huh.
Can't overspend your budget, otherwise you get big problems.
Yeah.
But I think, for me, this is a great illustration of the battle in this country, right? We have the traditionalists who love the cash. Would you put yourself in that category?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Or other group that says, you know what, things are changing. There's technology involved here. Is it perfect? No. Now, you can manage that by protecting your credits, right? Freezing it when you're not in the market for a car or a home or whatever, or buying something. So I think there's some debate here. 855-616-1620. What's your take on where this goes next? I say we're going cashless. I think Carol recognizes that. I don't want to speak for you, but you also understand that there's a lot of people like you that still love cash.
Yeah, I do. I can walk away and know that I'm not going to be surprised at the end of the month, period.
And that's a bad surprise, not a fun surprise.
No, it's a terrible surprise.
All right, she's Carol. I'm Steve. Calls and texts after this on WTMJ. Love this song. Do you love cash or do you like using your card? I use a debit card. If I don't have to put it on credit, I don't. And I pay my bills when I do.
I don't even have a debit card. Never have one.
Never have. See, never that's have telling one. As well.
Yeah, never have had one because I won't keep track of the slips. I'm telling you right now.
You can do it all online now. You don't have to keep the slips.
I don't do any banking online.
All right. Well, that's another change. All right, let's go. The phone line's lit up on this one. Mike, first up, Northwest Side. What do you think?
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Carol. I'm actually with a Carol big time because I use cash most of the time for anything smaller, like under $25. This way I can look at my wallet and I can feel the pain a little bit at a time so that I get at the end of the month have a big pain. I'll use credit cards for larger purchases, and that's about it. And I pay them off at the end of the month. But I rather keep track and physically see what I have in my wallet and go from there.
All right, makes sense. Mike, okay. I think that's traditionally how a lot of people do it, right?
Probably.
You see the cash go away.
I will say, I'm going to go one more. Like, if I'm buying if I'm doing a big purchase, like a refrigerator or a stove or something like that, I will go pick it out, find out exactly what it's supposed to be. I'll go to the bank, take it out of my savings account, get a cashier's check, and walk in and go, here.
Wow.
That's how committed I am.
You are committed to cash.
Totally committed to cash.
All right. Devin weighing in from Menominee Falls. Welcome to the show, Devin. You're in WTMJ. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve Carroll.
Morning. Hi. So what do you think about the cash versus credit debates?
So I'm mostly card. I think it's so much easier. I hate having change in my pocket most of the time. But if I'm going to like a festival, like Summerfest or something, I'll bring cash. I'll bring like $200 or whatever I need. And then that way I can like limit myself to what I'm spending at the festival.
Yeah, because when you're in those situations, it can get a little crazy. So is that the only exception, the sort of the festival or like the one-of events when you use cash versus credit?
Yeah, pretty much. If I'm at a restaurant too, if I'm like, you know, going out of town, like really my goal is to like have just my phone, because now they have like Apple Pay, which is like linked up to your credit card.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah, you can monitor that stuff all on your app there.
It is easy to manage because I've used Apple Pay as well. I mean, the tracking technology is part of all of the non-cash versions of transactions I love. Everything's recorded right there. You can see something that... I'll give you a personal example.
Okay.
So my wife buys things on Amazon.
Yes.
For the house. Things like...
I do too.
Mass quantities of toilet paper or whatever it is. Pick a thing. Household items. And my credit card is the secondary credit card. Because sometimes on a rare occasion, I'll say, buy me this. Please buy me this on the internet. And she uses my card.
Okay.
Well, for some reason, my card got thrown up into the... I think her card that she had on record, the expiration date happened.
Got it.
So it defaulted to my card. Also, I'm seeing these charges, $8, $8,
okay.
$20. And I go, hey, what's going on here? And she looked, and she realized then that her card was expired and that I was getting charged. That's how much detail I can glean from those daily transactions. Just seeing what's happening with my cards or my debit card. That's what I like about it.
Okay. Well, there's a safety issue for me, too. And let me give you an example. Lou's card got hacked somehow. Mm-hmm. His credit card got hacked. We got this thing in the mail, and I'm like, what the heck is this? And it's some kind of insurance policy. So I called, and it's $19.99 a month. And it's about if we experience a lightning strike and it knocks out our appliances, then we can use this insurance. And I'm like, no. And the guy was like, well, it was verified through an email. I said, no. And I said, what was the card? I said, you give me the number of the card you have. And it was Lou's card. So I don't know how that happened. I mean, He can be foolish, but he's not that stupid that he would sign up for an insurance policy first lightning strikes.
Right. I'm not saying that credit slash debit is perfect, because it's not, because all of us have had situations where our card was used. I used to travel a lot for work, and once a year I'd have somebody use my number, and that's simply the act of using a card in a different place. They get a hold of your number. That's
right.
All it takes.
If I'm traveling, that's a whole nother animal. That's a whole nother animal.
Let's go to Dylan in Milwaukee. Welcome to the show, Dylan. You're on WTMJ. Good morning.
Good morning. So I am more, I don't like using plastic to pay for anything. I'm more cash for everything. Because if I use plastic, I'm just going to spend, and then it's gone. My wife, as on the other hand, is more, she keeps everything on online banking. She's kind of like in the same boat as Steve. So what I do is I take my whole paycheck, I just give it to her, and then at the end of the day, everything's paid, all the bills are paid for, and she tells me, hilarious. You know, kind of what I have left over.
You got like a personal account.
Like allowance or something like that.
Yeah, nice deal.
Basically, yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's thanks for the call. That's well played, Dylan. I mean, if his wife's willing to do that for him, yes.
Well, and once again, here's poor Lou taking it on the chin. He never has any money. And he will randomly put anything on his credit card. And I get that and I go, what are you doing? No, don't do that. So I'm constantly, and I know if I give him a 20 to go buy a carton of eggs, that 20 is gone. I'm never getting any change.
He rounds up.
He always rounds up. Just
one more reason to love Lou. Denny joins us from Ogdensburg. Hey, Denny.
Hi.
Ogdensburg.
Hey, how are you guys? I'm a both cash and credit card guy, so
all right.
I understand both. But on the bigger picture, a friend of mine says if you outlawed cash, you'd end the drug business because you have to swipe a card to buy whatever illegal drugs you were purchasing. And about some accountants think 20% of our national GDP is done with cash, which no tax is ever collected on.
Interesting.
That's an interesting thing.
Federal budget and get rid of drugs, get rid of cash, which will never happen, by the way.
You made some, thanks for the call, Dan. I think you made some great points there. I never thought of the drugs thing, but I don't think we're ever going to go completely cashless. I just don't think that's going to happen.
I hope not, because I'm going to be in a world of hurt. It's very frustrating for me. I mean, like, even look out, our Third Street Market that we are sitting at the other day. Yeah, it's all cashless. And I went into my wallet. I got some rolls from the bakery, which, by the way, were delicious. And I had my money out, and he goes, oh, I'm sorry, we're cashless. And it just irked me to no end to put $5 on my credit card for rolls.
Yeah. But that's why the trend is happening. We've seen stadiums, arenas.
I was going to say, where's it at Lambeau?
Lambeau's cashless. I think there's a couple exceptions, but mainly cashless.
Okay.
Matter of fact, the interesting thing about Lambeau, not to get off topic, is you check yourself out now. They don't even have people doing that.
Really?
Yeah, you walk up with your food. You have to know what the food item is. You punch the screen, tells you how much you owe.
I would think that would be, well, you're on the honor system, so.
Yes. Well, we know that Packers fans are honorable people. It's those Bears fans that I'm worried about, Carol. I can tell you that the text line is kind of both.
Okay.
I'll just read a couple, and then we'll get to break. We got to get to Jeff here in a second. From the 262 credit card, 100% of the time, always pay off each month. Good for building credit and great points for travel. Yes, that's one of the benefits.
Yeah, if I travel...
If you pay it off.
If I travel, I use a credit card, yes.
One of the alarming things that's happening in our country during this recession or whatever this is that personal debt is increasing. Use of credit cards and not paying off that balance is also going up. Those are not good trends.
Right. If I do use it, it's always paid off 100%, which is why my credit score is where it is, because I never have anything hanging over my head.
There will always be, in my opinion, a segment of business in our economy for cash. I just think there is. The other thing I didn't mention, I didn't have time, and we got to get the break here. The government, our government spends billions of dollars producing and managing bills, paper bills, and coins.
Right.
It's like astronomical how much that costs. And it has to be redone, of course, recirculated every few years, especially with bills. That cost is also one of the reasons why some think we might go to Cashless.
Cashless, okay.
All right, we'll see what Jeff Wagner's going to talk about after this on WTMJ.
Closing time.
I'll give the last word on our cash versus credit debate to the 414 texter. Cash means someone has to make change, Carol. Good luck. Yeah, that question.
Oh, good. That's my popcorn story. When I went to the movies, the kid could not figure out how to put in the money for the amount tendered for the popcorn. I gave him cash. It was like I was speaking a foreign language.
And that's the other part of the problem. All right, he's up next. Jeff Wagner, what are you going to talk about today, Jeff?
Thanks, Steve. Lots of stuff coming up on the program. School system suing social media. $5 million in reparations. Trump says he's going to get indicted. What about putting tents out on the street and allowing it easier for to make it easier for homeless people to live there? What do we do with the domes? And a lot more of the Wagner Show starts right after the top of the hour news.